Generous support for Coastal Windage comes from Cameron's Restaurant Pub and Inn, and now RV Park. Cameron's is the only true British pub on the coastside, featuring 19 beers on tap and more than 60 brands of bottles. Come for the food and stay for the fun. Happy hour specials Monday through Friday. Open mic night on Thursday and karaoke on Friday and Saturday. Cameron's Restaurant Pub in Half Moon Bay.
It's summer on the coast, and you know what that means. No, not more fog. It means Ruben is on vacation, and it's time for the Summer Mike Series. Here's your host for the Summer Mike Series, Crystalyn.
Eddie Cochran and No Cure for the Summertime Blues. But you know what? We have a cure for the summertime blues. It's Coastal Windage Summer Mike Series. I'm your host this morning. I'm Brad Larson. And in case you have no clue who Brad Larson might be, I look to my left and see my lovely daughter, and she calls me Dad.
Dad Brad.
Dad Brad. Welcome, everyone. You're here at 100.9 KHMB 1710 AM radio. We're here for the Summertime Series, Mike Series, and let's get it kicked off right away.
Let's tell them that they have a call-in number.
Oh, yeah. Okay. If you want to call in and talk about anything under the sun, you want to complain.
Or the fog.
Or the fog. Actually, the fog is not quite all the way in today. It's hanging out there, but we'll see later on. It could come in. This edition of Coastal Windage is July 18th, and it's Friday morning. It's 9 o'clock, and I want to thank Ruben Truthmaker, especially the captain of this ship, for allowing me to sit in his chair. And to my left, of course, is my favorite daughter, Crystalyn, who is going to sit here and make sure that I don't let the show go completely off the rails. And also joining us this morning to my right, from Coastside
Buzz.
Coastside Buzz. I'm sorry, Michelle.
That's okay.
She's never a buzzkill, always a buzz thrill.
Aww.
Michelle Dragony. Good morning, Michelle.
Thank you, Brad the Dad.
How are you doing this morning?
I'm awake.
Okay, great. Fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's get to a couple of business items. First of all, as I know, Ruben always likes to do a air quality report. So I'm going to start with the air quality report for a place called Rhode Island on the East Coast. Why Rhode Island? I think Rhode Island gets picked on too much for being the size state that they are. Rhode Island is the smallest state in the Union, and they get compared to everything because they're so small. You know, Larry Ellison buys an island in the Pacific, and they say, wow, it's just about the size of Rhode Island, okay? Uh-huh. Or the fires take out half of California, and they say, wow, so many acres or square miles were burned this year. It's almost the size of Rhode Island. So Rhode Island, you're going to give you a little love today and say that your air quality is 38, which is real good, right?
Yeah.
Real good. Isn't 0 to 50 real good air?
Yes.
50 to 100, not so good. And over 100, you ought to be wearing a mask or living someplace else.
Yeah, okay. Something like that.
Also, I want to shout out to a little place called Anderson, Indiana. Anderson is famous only because two of my oldest friends live there, Michael Hibschley and Nancy Germain. They used to live here in the Bay Area, and we three were roommates for a couple of years. We had apartments and houses together as we were in our early 20s and scrambling through life. And I just wanted to say hey to you guys. I hope you're listening this morning. It would be noon where they are. And your air quality is 32, which is excellent. But then again, you live, and they do live, out in the middle of a soybean field.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. If you want a nice, quiet place to live, then get yourself a soybean field. Because soybeans make very little noise.
Except when they're being milked. then they're screaming.
Boom, boom. Okay.
Oh, Frank doesn't have his board set up today.
Oh, okay. We're not getting rim shots. Okay. Rhode Island's obviously the smallest state. You guys, either of you know the largest state in the union?
I do, but only because
Alaska?
You told me.
You're right, Alaska. Most people will tell you it's Texas. But it's really Alaska, and
I homeschooled my son through fifth grade, so I had to learn my states. I grew up in a foreign country, actually two, one in the my 6, 7. I was in Japan, and then in my teens, I was in England. So I was taught geography there, but in England, they didn't really include American states, so I had to learn along. So, yeah.
For years and years and years, I always thought Alaska was no bigger than, say, Oklahoma or Montana or any state like that.
But bigger than Rhode Island.
But bigger, everything's bigger than Rhode Island. I'm sorry, Rhode Island. And the reason
How much bigger than Texas is Alaska?
Probably three times bigger.
Wow.
Alaska is about 665,000 square miles. Rhode Island is 1,500.
Oh.
And Alaska, and then there's Texas, and then comes California after that. Hawaii, and then California.
Huh.
The reason I thought that Alaska was so small was because on every map of the United States I ever saw, especially on the wall of any classroom that I was in growing up, they show the United States in the middle, and because Alaska won't fit on that piece of paper, they would put it at an inset down in the lower left corner off the coast of Baja.
Oh, that's a good point. Okay? Yeah. Uh-huh.
And we didn't, as kids, we didn't understand scale at that point.
Yeah.
And so they would make it real small, and they had another inset for Hawaii next to it.
Yeah.
And you knew that Hawaii was small. But Alaska was just this little blob in the lower left corner, and you didn't realize. Mm-hmm. Look at a globe, and which it would be to scale, and look at the size of Alaska. Obviously, you're planning a trip to Alaska, and you think you're going to drive around Alaska, beware. It's 1,000 miles from one end to the
other. Reuben did that one summer. He went and he drove up to Alaska and all around. It was great. When he came back, he told all kinds of really cool stories. They have a lot better infrastructure up there. I guess they make their money through oil or something. But they had, like, community pools.
Yeah.
They had community centers.
Uh-huh.
I mean, they had community stuff, and I'm just thinking, well,
I'm sensing a theme.
15 minutes from San Francisco and 15 minutes from Silicon Valley, and we don't really have any of that.
Yeah.
Well, it's sort of sad.
Okay. Maybe we'll have to talk about that more.
Well, yeah. I did hear a rumor, unsubstantiated, so let me put that out there, but I did hear a rumor that the newer bond that was approved for the school for Cabrillo Unified included funds to rehab the pool, and that they will try
It's true. They talked about that. I'll be posting it later today or tomorrow. There is a Cabrillo Unified. Their last meeting was last week, and they have bond presentations, and the pool is definitely part of it. So we'll have to see. The Friends of Half Moon Bay Parks and Recs, they raised money to do a feasibility study, like we could do on the gondola. And the feasibility study will determine where it will go, because part of the problem is that it's the pool that we have right now is up at the high school, and the school district doesn't really want public up there.
Well, it sounded, the person that I spoke to who does work for the school district, made it sound like they were really going to try to work hard to figure that out. With the new pool.
There would be a liability question, obviously.
Yeah, and there's an insurance thing. And if you want to hop in on this conversation, because I'm getting the finger from Frank, 650-560-9851. So if you know anything official, feel free to call in. But yeah, it was very encouraging.
And they were talking about the hockey rink as well.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Terry, I don't know if you're listening, but you might want to know that. There's a bunch of there's some really rabid hockey players on the coast. So, but and that would solve the problem.
Skate hockey or
mm-hmm, Mm-hmm. We have, there's an ice rink over the hill too, and they go over there on the weekends, and then they do the real hockey.
Okay. Otherwise, they're on roller rinks.
And that would be a shame because it is a pretty well used rink. And then I heard another rumor, which was a couple of years ago, that they were thinking about putting it at the actual district offices.
The pool or the rink?
The pool. Although you do speak that the rink could go down there. That's sort of an interesting thing right there.
Once they tore that house down.
Right, where they tore the house down. That'd be kind of cool, actually, to be able to see roller hockey right there. Anyway, I mean, I'm a lifetime swimmer. I started swimming when I was 5 competitively. And I know I spent quite a few years when my son was young cleaning the bathrooms of the pool because I persuaded the person who was in charge of Parks and Recs, who was Dirk Alvarado at the time, and I persuaded him that if they could keep it open and pay for the lifeguards, and they were, at that time, the city and the school were pretty in sync with each other, but they didn't have anybody to clean the bathrooms before the swim team came in, and I said, well, I'll do that. And then I got into trouble because apparently I was taking a union job by cleaning the bathroom. So, I mean, it's just, you know, it's like a little gopher, you know, hill, and you just keep, you know, banging the gopher heads down and say, oh, we get to swim. Oh, no, we don't. We get to swim. Oh, no, we don't. And I think that the last straw for me was about 10 years ago, and I was teaching teen cert up at the high school with then battalion chief Dave Cosgrave, and we would have the Harbor District come in. Because I had them all year. I wasn't just teaching cert. I was teaching first aid, and I also turned it into a career class. And Carrie Smith from the Harbor would come in.
Carrie!
And he would talk about the Harbor District and what it did. And then he would always ask the kids who could swim. And a third of the kids, all Latino, would raise their hands that they couldn't swim. And after the, I don't know, maybe the second or the third year, I was pissed off. And I said, okay, time out. I said, everybody who can't swim, I will teach you how to swim at the public pool. I mean, at the high school pool when it opens in the summer. And it was supposed to be open in the summer. So the first day of school, I go up to the pool. The cover's off, so they didn't even cover it. There's just heat pouring out of the pool. The gate is locked. And it's pretty clear that the pool is not going to be open to the public for the summer. And that was 10 years ago, and it's the same today. So I never got to teach those kids how to swim. And when you have swim team, you have water polo, you have junior guards, you have 3 reasons to make a more equitable attempt to get people who would not normally have a pool access, and that's called a public pool. And in the 40s and the 50s, post-Second World War, that's what we had. Everybody had a public pool somewhere in the United States. And that was funded a lot by the federal government. And now we don't have pools because as they got older, they're so expensive to keep up, and that's sort of where we are today in a pool desert.
Hmm. I was that guy for a summer. My wife had 3 kids go through the local community pool, and my career was solar heating swimming pools. Mm. So when I got hooked up with my wife, then I became the maintenance guy down at the pool. I worked on the solar system to keep it leak-free and heating the pool. And then there was the bathrooms. I got the bathroom detail and vacuuming the pool because they used to let it go over the wintertime.
Yeah.
And it was a frog pond a week before they would open it up. And I would vacuum. Have you ever imagine vacuuming an Olympic-sized or competition-sized swimming
did.
Pool?
Yeah, Ladera Oaks pools. There were 2 of them, and they were both competition size. And I had to clean both of them. Let's say my upper body was very, very tight.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and then there was the backwash. I mean, just getting the backwash, the diatomaceous earth into the cistern where you put the, I mean, that was.
Wow,
I know
DE.
I know
DE. Fantastic,
yeah.
Michelle. And where do you never, ever, ever put your DE? Down a drain. Because it's sedentary or
right.
It's a
yeah.
sediment.
Yeah, yeah,
and it
yeah.
doesn't go away.
Yeah.
It has to be put in the trash.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Speaking of trash, maybe you could do a little trash talking in a little while and give us an update of what might be happening with Republic Services and see what might be piling up. Ooh, somebody's
But I think the last information we got was at the city council meeting, and Crystalyn, we were both there. Well, I'm there in spirit because I'm always online. She's always there in person. They're still striking. But apparently they've got, I just read their most recent press release, and apparently they've agreed to do some limited services. So not necessarily your green bin or your recycling bin, but they are picking up the garbage, and sometimes they pick up the recycling. But what the city is saying is just keep your bins out front, you know, bungee them, you know, if there's so that the rodents don't get in there. But if you leave them out front, if Republic has the time and the will and the ability, they'll come and they'll empty your garbage. And there are 3 garbage drop-offs. If your garbage can is like overflowing, it might be better just to take some of the overflow and take it to either Higgins or the sewer treatment plant, which is in just off the Kehoe neighborhood on Bev Ashcraft Road.
And we should note that by Higgins, it's the road that leads up to Johnston House.
Oh, yes, the historic train depot.
Yeah.
And then there was one more.
There's a dumpster right behind City Hall.
Ah, City Hall,
Johnston,
that's right.
On Johnston Street. That one's, you know, kind of meant a little bit more for the restaurants and the residents that are right there in downtown. I did read an article yesterday morning that apparently some cities are starting to call on Bill Gates. So apparently one of the investment companies that he's a major holder of is a major holder of Republic Services stock or shares or however that works.
Huh.
And so at least...
Do you have Bill's number?
We're a longtime friend. And so apparently at least one city council has sent a letter to him asking him to utilize his weight and... negotiation powers to try to end it.
Turn a little of that philanthropy toward Half Moon Bay.
Yeah.
I don't understand. Republic made a lot of money last year, a profit. I mean, I know they're publicly traded and everything like that, but I mean, it's kind of like the train, you know, engineers and drivers. They had the same problem, is that, you know, they wanted more money. And their work hours had changed over time.
Mm-hmm.
And the way they worked was very different. And so on top of just pay and work conditions, I think they finally ended up settling. But, I mean, some of the accidents happened because things were sort of kerfuffled within the union. And the union workers weren't 100% behind what they were doing. And I think with the garbage, I mean, there's so much health and human, you know, risk that's taken in not picking up your garbage. I'm floored that it's taken this long so far.
Well, and then I think the fact that it started in another state, right? So it's like here in California, and I know one of them is, some are striking out of solidarity and some are striking for an actual negotiation. I think there's at least one in California that's striking for actual negotiation. But where it really started was in, you know, another state where their pay just in general is a lot
less. Was it Massachusetts or something?
I want to say that I heard Philadelphia maybe. And if somebody knows more about this, please feel free to call in 650-560.
We are happy to be corrected.
9851.
It's 5 random cities around the Bay Area that are striking. Half Moon Bay is one of them. Fremont, I believe Fairfield, and some part of Solano County.
Hmm.
And that's about it.
Yeah, I think it depends on... So I think it's the drivers and, you know, the union workers are just, you know, not crossing the picket line. But there are... So I learned that I think it's Santa Rosa. Their Republic Services team is not in the union. So the Santa Rosa team is the one that is being deployed to do these slim down services.
Oh,
that's what that was my understanding of what might be happening. So,
huh.
So every, you know, Republic Services, you know, mini headquarters seems to be run slightly different based on that area.
Huh.
So
I'm surprised that there's any, garbage person that's not unionized. That's, that sort of blows my mind, which leads me to another question that you might know. Recology, are they unionized?
My suspicion, and I haven't gotten a clear answer, but to be fair, I have not reached out to Recology directly. But my guess is that they are, and so they would probably also belong to the Teamsters. So even if the city reached out to them or the county reached out to them to help pick up the slack, they also, their workers might not want to cross the picket line either. So,
but yeah, they're in a different union department, a different union number or club or what? I don't know how it works.
Yeah, I have to be real honest. I am not sure. I understand the gist of a union, but I do not understand. I don't know the nitty gritty of a union. Have you ever been a part of a union, Dad?
Never.
No. Okay.
No. And I was in construction for 40 years too.
Yeah.
But we were kind of a niche outfit. We were solar installers. And we spent all of our times on rooftops, and we were happy to fly under the radar. Mm. For instance, OSHA didn't really discover who we were for a long, long, long time. Okay. And when I was, younger we would call ourselves spiders. That's what we did. Mm. We crawled around on rooftops and up and down walls, running pipe and wiring and things of that nature. And doing it in a way that you would shudder to think.
Well, and we're about the same age. And when I was a painting contractor in the late 70s, early 80s, there was no OSHA.
No.
I mean, there was... wasn't even on our radar, and hazmat was not on our radar either. I mean, it was customary for most contractors, particularly painters, they always had a paint van where the old paint was stored.
Uh-huh. And you can always find that van, because if you follow the white stripe going down the middle of the road, just keep on that road, on that path, and eventually you'll come to that van.
And it'd usually be a van that wasn't working very well, mm-hmm. so eventually it would be put on the street. That was the way of getting rid of hazmat in the day. And I remember when hazmat started to be actually a thing, and I remember the first time in our shop we had to put in a double containment berm. And that was my first experience with hazmat. And then I went into printing, and I had my hands in type wash cleaning the ink off the plates. Mm-hmm. And I'm still waiting for that ball to drop.
I had my hands in glue and primer and a bunch of different really terrible things.
Yeah.
I had a buddy that would use primer to wash the glue off of his hands because it was a solvent.
Right.
Well, yeah. one day, for absolutely zero reason, it was hot. He started to sweat, and his hands turned purple.
Wow.
Oh. From the primer coming out of his skin.
Oh my gosh.
No, I was never in a union.
Listen, the only time I ever had to deal with OSHA was when I was a photo developer. And then even though it was in machines at that time, it wasn't, you know, like the original, like you've got the little buckets and you're doing every photo. It was 1 hour photo. But, you know, we always had to change the chemicals in the machine, in the racks, and pulling it out and stuff. And there were still dark rooms involved and all of that. And so that was my one and only job that required OSHA certification and keeping everything super clean and, you know, uncontaminated.
I was actually a typesetter, typographer, and we used a CompuGraphics digital photo machine, which was essentially very primitive, and it was run on film and paper. And you could only see code. You couldn't see, it wasn't WYSIWYG, what you see, what you get. But I had to change that paper, and I had to change the chemicals as well. I'm just thinking, gosh, if I'm going to fall asleep tonight, I'm probably got another half a dozen chemical exposures that I've had. So I think it is better these days. I think people are more careful, and OSHA's a little bit more of an awareness. As somebody who used to be a contractor, though, I'll be walking around or riding my bike somewhere, and I'll see somebody doing that, especially when they're on ladders. It just drives me nuts. The shortcuts on the ladders, you can't do that. But
no, I've fallen.
Are you lucky you haven't broken anything?
I didn't break anything yet.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. I don't allow myself on ladders anymore. And I know I was having this guy do some work for me around my place. And he was getting up on the ladder. I knew he was 5 years older than me. And I said, hey, I don't think I want you to do that. I don't want to be responsible for you falling off the ladder and having to tell your wife you're on a ladder on my roof.
And we're back. That unintended pause, thanks to Comcast, and as we have all experienced, on this coast side trying to work here, sometimes the internet just goes down and there's just not a dang thing you can do about it until the wind shifts and it comes back online. So thank you very much for hanging in there. And thank you to the awesome, awesome Jay Michaels for helping us out in that moment of need. We really appreciate you. And we're not exactly sure when it dropped, so we're going to kind of pick up where we left off and talk about ladder ladder mishaps.
We were talking about ladder safety.
Ladder safety.
Which is not real interesting, but I did have one story where I was installing solar on the Berkeley Tennis Club. And when I got the system finished, one of the board members had come by and I offered to him to give him a tour of the rooftop. And so I had a ladder there. And this particular board member was a professor at UC Berkeley in the nuclear department. And I offered to help him get up the ladder, and he says, no, I can't climb a ladder. And it goes back to when I was working down in the southern Nevada desert on nuclear explosions. I said, what do you mean? And he says, well, when we would get ready to set something off, we would dig a super, super deep well and put an explosive at the bottom of that hole. Then we would build a shack over the top of that hole, and inside the shack went a lot of monitoring equipment that so that we would be able to see what was going on from afar. And when down there, afar was way far away. He says they had to have some antennas installed on the top of that shack, and it was my job to work all that that equipment. And when it came time to putting the antenna up on the top of the shack, I couldn't do it. They had to bring a scissor lift out there, put me in the scissor lift, ramp it up to the level of the top of the shack so that I could walk off and then set the antenna. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. This guy basically sets up the fuse for a nuclear explosion to happen underneath him.
And he needs a scissor lift.
And he needs a scissor lift to get on top of the shack. I'm like, man, I think I'd have a few other things I'd be worried about. Anyway,
it's always interesting how our brains prioritize issues.
You know, if you're afraid of heights, you're afraid of heights, you know, and that's okay.
Well, I'm sort of the opinion that I am naturally afraid of heights, but I've done things to help myself not be so afraid. I'm not afraid of getting on the ladder in the sense of the heights. I'm afraid of falling. And at my age in my 60s, you just one accident away of not being able to walk properly, you know, and I don't want to be hobbling. I'm going to try to get through life without knee replacement surgery, which is why I actually gave up tennis. I played in my teens and in my 20s, and then I started it back up in my mid 40s, and I lasted a couple of years. But I just play so aggressively that I was always sore after the game, and I just felt like, well, you know what I do now is I paddle in the harbor. So, and I know you do, you know, kayak paddling too. And I have a surf ski and you get pretty good exercise on it. So, and the worst that can happen is I could fall out of the boat and go plop. And I might have to be embarrassed and have to swim back to shore or dragging my boat. But
that's our rule when we kayak. We don't go any further from shore than we're willing to swim back.
Right. There you go.
I never ride my bicycle faster than I'm willing to fall off.
Yes.
And I never climb a ladder higher than I'm willing to hit the ground.
Those are really good rules.
Rules to live by.
Yeah. To survive by.
I'm still here.
Well, if you go to the harbor today, there is a tall ship in the harbor. I don't think it's one of those programmatic ships where they do historic stuff. I am going to paddle out to find out. And the yacht club might know, but if anybody's around and wants to take a walk in the harbor, they can see the tall ship. It's pretty cool. And then if you like construction, I love construction. There's lots of pipe just all over the harbor down by the boat ramp because they're starting the dredge project.
Absolutely. Oh, great.
And we've been waiting for a decade for this, and it's actually starting to happen. And they're going to run a pipe all the way along the breakwater, all the way to the other side of the breakwater at the Mavericks Beach. There's going to be buoys at the entrance to the harbor to let the boats, the fishing boats, know that there's a pipe that's embedded underneath the soil there while they're working. And then they're going to, they have eelgrass that they have to take out on the east side, and then they store it, and then they create a platform on the west side, and they'll replant the eelgrass there.
What does the pipe do?
So the pipe is going to transport
sand.
It's going to transport sand.
They're going to pump the sand.
Yes,
through the pipe.
Yes, but they have to do internal harbor pumping to create the platform for the new eelgrass first, and then once they remove the eelgrass from the east side, which is right by where it's on the harbor side of Surfers Beach, basically. Then on the other side, on Surfers Beach, they're going to build a 1,000-foot berm. And I'm going to be fascinated how they do this because the tide comes all the way up to the rocks. But that's what the plans are for. And then they're going to dredge. They're going to pull the sand out of that area where the eelgrass was. It's mostly by the near the boat ramp area. And then they're going to shoot 100,000 cubic yards, maybe it's 75,000, I think it's 100,000, but anyway, a bunch of sand on the other side, and we're going to see if it stays there. It's a pilot project, mm-hmm. but we did just get a 5-year California Coastal Commission extension, so if it goes well, then we'll do it again. And General Manager Pruitt, he has had this idea, and it's been bouncing around even at the Midcoast Community Council meeting, but Deer Creek comes down. We have all these watersheds that come into the harbor, and that's why we have so much sand buildup, because the breakwaters keep all the sand. And Deer Creek is the one that goes all the way through El Granada, through Quarry Park and everything. And if we can move the outfall, which right now is right by the boat ramp, which is why the boat ramp keeps getting, you know, needing to be cleared, and then we can put it on the other side at Surfers Beach.
Or do you think there's ever the possibility, let's say they move the sand from the inside to the outside, and it stays like long enough that it's viable to do it, could they just embed the pipe and just like have it just be this like constant thing that they can just turn on as needed, like it just lives there,
I
and
think
then they turn it on as needed to move the sand?
I think so. I've got to talk to Brad Dammitz about it. He's the contractor that's running it. That's generally the idea. In the, I think it was the 70s, that's when we started creating the marine protected areas, mm-hmm. Like the Farallon Sanctuary and then the Monterey Sanctuary. And the Harbor District, I double checked this, this is true. We were sent a 8.5 by 11 piece of paper in an envelope called the mail, and it said apply for dredging application now before the MPA becomes a legislative body that's going to tell you can't do it. And apparently nobody answered the letter. So Santa Cruz, they answered their letter. Monterey and Moss Landing, they answered their letters. So we are the only harbor that didn't. And so that's why we can't dredge. And it's literally taken us 10 years to get the permit because there's 16 different jurisdictions. I mean, Fish and Game, or Fish and Wildlife is what they call it now. The Marine Sanctuary, you've got Resource Water Control Board. It goes on and on. And they each one of them have to sign off. And they're, unfortunately, they're not like in series. They're sort of in this weird parallel. So there might be a lead agency like the Harbor District, but they have to work with another lead agency, which is really the Marine Protected Area, the Farallon Sanctuary. So we're dredging now.
Yay!
We'll see how it goes. The dredging should be done by, and they have to be out of there by permit requirements by October. But anyway, if you like construction, there's going to be lots of equipment. Bring your kids, your grandkids down to watch, because I know I'm going to be haunting the area. It's exciting.
Fantastic.
You know what also has big equipment?
What's that?
Airports.
Airports. we were talking earlier.
Yes.
Listening to the show last week, you had on Livy Streetwise. What a great name. I love that name. In fact, I got to go back to the archives and find out how the show was introduced when she was co-hosting with Ruben Truthmaker. And you're asking people to call in and give their opinions to a couple of people named Truthmaker and Streetwise?
Yeah. There was also another guy, I forget.
The dude.
Was he called the other dude, the other dude or something like that? Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Which he's the one that originated it, I think, with Ruben.
Okay.
So she got me going when she started to talk about her love for the airport. I happen to be a huge airport nut. I like to get there way early, cruise around, look, go to the stores, eat, have a meal before, you know, the plane arrives. And, I just love it. It's, there's hustling and bustling and people are going on vacations and most of the people are pretty happy to be there. Once you've finally made it through security. And I'm not a sitter. I'm usually up against the window watching the operations going on around the planes. You know, I'll watch that conveyor belt for about 15 minutes until I see my own suitcase. And I get all excited.
I totally do that.
Bang on the window. And the guy on the tarmac's looking up going, what's wrong with that guy? And his friend will tell him, oh, he saw his bag. And he's like, oh, now he's excited.
Well, anyway, so I'm very specific. Specifically, my suitcase is a very, very, legal pad yellow. So oh, okay. I can spot it from a mile away.
Good. You know, I've been going back and forth to the airport a lot this year. We've got lots of, you know, friends and relatives have been coming to stay with us and a few grandchildren and whatnot from Florida and New York. And I've probably been to Oakland and San Francisco airports probably 15 to 20 times this year,
yeah,
going back and forth, and I've become quite the pro. I'm an airport pro now. Oakland's easy. Oakland is just a bus stop when you're dropping off or picking up people. Oh, and by the way, Oakland, take San Francisco out of your name.
Well, they haven't been allowed to do it.
Your Oakland Airport. Now they want to say International
Airport.
Now
they want to say San Francisco Bay.
Yes, San Francisco
Bay. Well, and then they moved the San Francisco from the one side to the other. So their original want was San Francisco Oakland Airport. And that got turned down. Yeah. Lots and lots of opposition. And then they thought, like, well, if we just do Oakland San Francisco Bay Airport, that's so much better. And everybody's like, no, you can't do that. People are going to land there thinking that they've landed at SFO.
Right.
And they're going to be...
They're in the wrong town.
Yeah.
They get into the Uber car.
I'll never... So there is a thing in the branding markets. It's called a cheater brand. And it's a brand that specifically names itself after something that's already successful and blah, 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 so that they can siphon. And it's just like, dear Oakland, you've been around long enough. You don't need to be a cheater brand. Live on your own brand.
Really? They're talking about Oakland Pride all the time. Own your airport. It's just Oakland International Airport. The same thing goes for Reno Tahoe. Nobody ever went to Reno looking for Tahoe.
They're like 2 hours apart.
If you're going to Tahoe, you go to Tahoe. If you're going to Reno, you're going to Reno. There's no place in the world called Reno Tahoe. Reno just decided to stick Tahoe on the end to sound like they're the gateway to that resort area. And that's just not the way it is. It's 40 miles away. And if you go to Reno looking for Tahoe, you missed it.
I hope you enjoy your rent a car.
Yeah. So I've been going in and out of San Francisco Airport a lot. And I got that place so figured out. I'm going to do this as a public service on how to pick people up. Now, dropping people off is easy. You run in past departures. You kick them out of the car. You don't spend a lot of time doing it because Aunt Edna has been with you for 3 weeks, and you can't wait for her to get out of your car. She's lucky if you slow down long enough for her to jump to the curb, throw the bag at her, and you're gone. Departures is
we should
a
note
big
that
deal.
We're kind to Aunt Edna, and we give her one of those suits that they wear when they're driving NASCAR, so it's very padded.
She can roll.
She can tuck and roll.
Yeah, and then pop up, and then she's right there at the ticket counter, right?
Yeah, we make sure that she's got the bags that are like the hard plastic on the outside. So, you know, it's all very, very throw from the carable.
The craft is in the pickup, you know? And I finally got this down to a science. At least this is my science. If someone out there has a better science for picking up at San Francisco, you can call me. 650-560-9851.
Oh, look at Brad, the dad with a number.
Give me a better idea. Don't go to the cell phone lot over at the north end of the field. It's just a parking lot in the middle of nowhere up against the United Airlines headquarters over there. And there's nothing to do and nothing to see. And you're just going to sit there waiting to get a text, right? At the south end of the airport, you go to Millbrae Avenue. Okay, it's the next exit down. You take Millbrae Avenue a couple of blocks down towards the water. We're going to call that east for those of you that are directionally challenged. Go down towards the water and make a right-hand turn. On that corner is the Westin Hotel. Go past the Westin about another block, and on the left, there's a very small park area with a lawn, and the San Francisco Bay Trail actually goes along there. Huh. You can get out of your car. You can walk around. You can pee the dog there. And also, or straight across, you're looking across the lagoon at Terminal 1, and both runways are right in front of you. You can watch airplanes taking off.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You can watch the airplanes land, okay? Yeah. And if you go on flightradar24.com, and you put in your flight number that you're going to meet, you can track that plane all the way to the tip of the runway.
Oh, that's okay? So fun.
So you watched your icon on the map on your phone.
Yeah.
And it's constantly telling you how far out that airplane is.
Yeah, you can tell them when they're landing.
You know before they know. Yeah. Okay? They're waiting for the wheels to hit. You see them 20 feet before the wheels hit.
That's right.
Okay?
Yeah, yeah.
And you can watch their plane come in. For Terminal 1, you can actually, if you've got good eyes, you can watch it come up to the gate and pull in. And then you'll get a text from them saying, I'm here. And I said, I've known that for a half an hour.
Which is also fun because even when Dad is not picking me up and I'm even like at the airport in Sacramento going to my mom's house or whatever, I'll still tell him the flight and then we'll text and everything.
I track everybody.
Wherever they are in the United States,
I'm tracking them. But then you'll get your text, right? And you're going to go to the terminal. Don't go back up to the freeway and get on the freeway. Head towards the terminal along the frontage road there. I believe it's called Old Bayshore Road and becomes South Airport Boulevard. It's a frontage road, and it's used by mostly employees and shuttles from Hotel Row there. And it will take you into the terminal, okay? There's big blue signs that tell you which way to turn, mostly a couple of right turns, how to get into the terminal, but you're going to find yourself down underneath all of the other freeway mazes above you, and you're absolutely going to believe that you're someplace you're not supposed to be. But you are okay to be there. You'll make a couple of turns, okay, and then you'll get on a ramp that'll take you up past a sign that'll say, domestic to the left, international to the right. You pick which one you need. You go around a corner. Suddenly it'll dump you down right in front of the terminal entrances that you would have hit when you come off the freeway.
Yeah.
But you've beaten everybody else there. it works great. And then from there, I would always suggest that you go to departures. There is no reason to go to arrivals. Arrivals is a mess. As I said before, departures are quick. People aren't there very long. Arrivals, there are 65 family reunions going on at the curb at arrivals, and people are triple parked. And in a lot of cases, families will go in a van because they're going to pick up Edna, and you haven't seen her in 5 years. So they spill out all over the place. And then there's a lot of hugging going on, way too much hugging going on, and they're there forever. So arrivals,
can we advocate high fives? Just a quick high five and get her in the car.
Something, you know, or the TSA guys ought to be rushing towards you, going, get back in the van and get out of here.
Which I actually did see that when Jesse and I came back from Idaho. No. I'm lying. I came back from L.A., and he was picking me up, and there was one of the security people was running around. And if you were parked there for more than 3 minutes, he was coming to suss you out. When your person's coming, you need to drive back around. You need to clear this space. He was an efficient machine, that man.
Mm-hmm. Now, if your party that you're picking up is only rolling a carry-on, they don't need to go downstairs to the baggage carousel anyway. That's another reason why there's so many people, is that, you know, people are staggered in the way they get to the airport, but you're all on the plane together. You're all walking to the baggage area together. You're all claiming your bags and fighting for the rail together. And then you're all out at the curb waiting for your rides together, right? And that's just a crowd. You don't need to do it. If you've got a carry-on, or even if you go down and get your bag, there's an elevator and an escalator right there. Go up one floor. It's a piece of cake to do it. Go
up one floor. Is that where departures is?
Yes, mm-hmm. Departures on top.
Okay.
Arrivals on the bottom.
Okay. So when you're texting,
because arrivals are on the baggage. The baggage moves around under the airport, mm-hmm. and while the people move around above the airport. Okay.
Right.
So top is departures. That's just people in and out. And bottom is where all the bags go. And then they put the arrival curve right there. So just have your people go up a floor. Go out. You're still at the same airline.
Yeah.
And then you find that there's almost nobody there.
Oh, that's
and then
clever.
Always when you have them go out the door, always have them move a little bit to the right. As you go to the right, there's less and less cars because cars tend to dive in early when they get to that curve. Yeah,
path of least resistance.
Yeah. That's my public service for the cosign.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. I don't know the next time I'll be on a plane, but when I do, well, I will be as efficient because I am my father's daughter, so I am.
Make sure you call me because I'll take you. I will come all the way over here from Walnut Creek and pick you up and take you to the airport just so you can see how it's done.
I will note, I will avoid the airport to the best of my ability. So when I have to go to a conference or anything like that, if it is within 10-hour drive, I will drive versus going to the airport. So the only reason I ended up even having to fly back from the L.A. conference was I originally was going to drive. We drove down there. Jesse came with me, and he actually had a piece of memorabilia that he needed to pick up from L.A. So then he picked it up and drove back. So he drove to and home from L.A. in one day.
Does he drive Betty?
No. We
so
go in his
Blue Forerunner. Betty is her blue Bronco.
Yes, I was going to drive Betty, but... Betty's still too new for Jesse to want to drive her on a regular basis. Also probably doesn't help that she's powdered blue. I mean, I'm going to say. If I could have gotten a pink Jeep, that was the other option. But I was also told that he wouldn't be seen in a pink Jeep.
So Brad, the dad, has a Jeep as well, but it is not blue. It is not pink.
It's silver.
It is black and gray, right?
Black and silver. With a big kayak rack on the top. It looks like a Land Rover or something like this. I get compliments on it all the time. They say, that's really cool. Because I have a winch on the front and a big rack. And I get compliments. They say, that's really, really cool. And I go, no, it's just stock. You know, it doesn't have.
Have you ever used the winch?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I only had to recover a friend's truck that got off a road one time. Other times I've just used it to hoist things. Uh-huh. I've got a block and tackle in the garage, and I can lift things with it. I've also pulled small trees out of the ground with it, roots and all.
Well, after the wedding,
winches have stuff that you can
handy
do.
Dandy, Brad.
Yeah.
After the wedding, I'll get my winch. All right. Well, thank you, everybody, and we hope you have a great weekend. And Dad, thank you for coming. Any last parting words?
Thank you for having me. Thanks for being here, also, Michelle.
It was fun.
Help fill those awkward silences.
All right.
That's it for us at KHMB 100.9.
Coastal Windage, the top of the coast.